with the Chime Power Chant.
Good morning, everyone. This is a special meeting of the Administration and Operations Committee of the Annuity and Pension Board of the Employees Retirement System. It is Tuesday, April 18th at 9 a.m. Can I please have a roll call?
Yes, Ms. King.
Here.
Mr. Klusman.
Here.
Ms. Sawa.
Here.
Quorum.
Jan, please note that Mr. Bell is online too, but for some reason he's muted. Terry, can you do anything about that?
That's why he missed the number. Mr. Bell, you're on the public line. If you want to get into the other one.
You sent this morning. Yeah.
Yeah. The one on the calendar invite. I'll resend to you in a second as well.
Are you ready to go?
If you want to wait for Mr. Bell, otherwise, committee's here.
This will give him a second to log on then.
This is Tom. He texted me saying he can hear us, so you can go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Then our first agenda item is the approval of the draft ERS 2024 budget. Dan, are you presenting or is Jerry?
Dan's going to lead us through the draft budget.
Yes. This is Dan Gopal and I'm the ERS Chief Financial Officer. In the committee packet, you should have a summary of the budget. I'll just go over the main changes. For the 2024 budget compared to the 2023 budget. The overall increase on the 2024 budget is about $271,000 more than the 2023 adopted budget. There are two main drivers of the increase. The first one is the salaries and fringe benefits. DER, as you may know, they completed some market studies and reclassifications for ERS. There's still a few outstanding. They still need to get our clerical and our IT staff done, so I kind of incorporated that into the 2024 budget as well. And since the salary went up about almost just under $900,000, that will also increase the fringe rate. The fringe benefit rate it's going to be the same as 2023. The city has set it at 45% for General City. So that's the increase there for $300,000. Our professional services went up by $241,000. The reason for that increase is mostly due to an increase in the number of investment manager fees that are paid by vouchers. We pay our investment managers two ways. They either just do a transfer right out of from the custodian, and it doesn't even involve us doing a voucher or a budgeted item. And the other way is they'll send us an invoice, and then we'll go through the comptroller's office and pay it, you know, using a voucher. So we've had a couple more investment managers request that we pay it by invoice. So that's that increase. For equipment purchases, we are only requesting $713,000 this year compared to just over $2 million in 2023. That's just, the reduction is mostly due just to where we are on the replacement cycle of the IT equipment. I know that Jeff and his staff have took advantage of some good deals, so they purchased a few items a little earlier than projected. With that, I think those are the main points. Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, does anyone have any questions?
Chair, it's Molly.
Go ahead.
Dan, thank you for presenting. Thank you for a thorough, detailed budget. This is really very transparent, so to speak, and it kind of outlines everything, and I wish that every department was this thorough in their budget before being a former budget analyst. But a couple of things I wanted to just curious is on the details, where it says a general, and this is, you know, minute, right? And the general office expense, is that correct? We spend about $10,000 in subscriptions and publications?
Yeah.
Or $16,000? Yes. Okay. I'm just curious because in this day and age of electronic, I didn't know that. Curious about
Israel. Yep, and we subscribe to a ton of, the investment team has a bunch of subscriptions, the Wall Street Journal, we get, yeah, there's a lot of them, a lot of subscriptions.
P&I, the trustees get the journal, and the P&I as well, most of them. And there are others too. We have a subscription service for, you know, tax law, the RAA. It all adds up.
Okay. That's right. And I know one other question I have, and this has always been a thing for me, and I'm just curious, I know, I think David is on the line, and, you know, looking at the manager professional services, one area within there is the investment manager's fee. So, Dan, what you alluded to is that these expenditures, are these projected expenditures of $10 million and change, north of $10 million, is for managers who we pay directly through the ERS system.
Yep.
However, this is not the totality of our entire amount of management fees, correct?
Yes. Yes. It's about, I think, I want to say...
80 million.
Yeah, around 80 million is our total investment.
So to clarify, what happens sometimes, as you've alluded to, Molly, is that the managers report the returns net of fees to us. If we have if we participate, if we have subscriptions for, you know, alternative assets, particularly, you know, private real estate, private equity, and some other commingled funds, even for standard, you know, normal asset classes or non alternative asset classes, they just subtract the fees out of the fund, and so it doesn't really get budgeted because they report earnings after fees. So you're quite right, but we report in our financial statements the true economic value of the fees that we're paying. And unlike most of our, unlike a lot of funds, we report everything net. And Eric or David, you have any comments you want to make on that? You guys are available? I guess they're not available.
Yeah. No.
Eric, why don't you speak to it first, and if I have anything to add, I can.
Sure. Yeah. Good morning, everyone. I think Jerry summed it up pretty well. I will say, yeah, I think the fees last year that we reported in the act for were close to $85 million. A lot of that was driven by when I say last year, that was of course for the 2021 act for so. That was driven a lot by private equity performance fees that were the managers realized in 2021, kind of at the peak of the market. So we're expecting that to be down quite significantly in 2022. But it really is, it's mainly the alternatives that drive this. So when Dan talked about, you know, some of the fees moving from kind of non-budgeted into now budgeted, I mean, that's, you'll remember we made a decision to, reduce the size of our allocation to UBS, our hedge fund of funds. So that's, they don't ever send us an invoice. That's those fees are just taken out of the underlying funds. So any money that comes out of there, we're anticipating that it's going to be moved into something where we are receiving an invoice. So it'll be at a lower fee rate, but it's going to be invoice versus non-invoice. So those are some of the changes. I don't know, David, anything else to add?
is that answering your question, Molly, or do you want to, is there something else that you...
No, this is really good, David.
I mean, I think that the big takeaway is that if anybody really wants to know the total number of investment management fees that the fund pays related to investments, you don't get it from what we're talking about here today. That's an annual number that we get that we make sure is accurate or in the financial statements. And we understand that number really well. I know Dan and Robin put together some great slides that go into, I think, yeah, everybody would appreciate the detail that goes into that when you do look in those slides. What's going on here are really the fees that we, to be honest, we have very little control over. If the fund does really well in 2023 and 2024, we're probably going to be over budget, but that'll be the best story ever our managers are doing great and our asset value of the fund is probably growing really high. I mean, if the fund doesn't do well or doesn't perform well, we will probably be under budget, but that isn't necessarily anything to celebrate when it comes to investments either. So, and then some of these, like Eric and Jerry and Dan have said, they're asset allocation decisions at the end of the day. When we don't talk about it when we talk about asset allocation, but when we increase or decrease private equity or hedge funds or real estate, that impacts how we pay the fees, but it's which what we're talking about here today, not necessarily the total fees. It has an impact on the total fees, but this isn't that shows up somewhere else.
No, I agree, and I appreciate that, but it did answer my question. So basically what I'm hearing is, when we look at this $24 million requested budget, it is not in totality the entire cost and function plan. This plus, you know, it's finally a totality of what this operation incurs, is to look at the actual financial statement. This is just what goes through this city system, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then the only other question I have, and this is so, it's not even, I don't think it's a question, but I noticed the city attorney's fee. I've never seen it that low. I'm curious there, besides Patrick, anyone else's billing, or especially in 21, 22, where we had, you know, a little more extensive need for a city attorney, I recall. So I'm curious, is there some maybe lagging bills, or are they just... didn't provide, and we had to go outside service. I know they were short staffed quite a bit, and I know we always had Patrick on. But
so well, I think
the actual expenditures in 22 is $53,000 seems super.
I think our fees, our legal fees represent not only what we pay the city attorney on a routine basis, but also to the extent that we use outside counsel for litigation or for for contracts. You know, we use Reinhardt frequently when we enter into contracts for alternative asset classes, like private real estate and hedge funds. So that reflects that level of activity.
No, I get that, Jerry. I was just mentioning the city attorney line itself.
Okay.
Yep. That is reimbursable to city attorney's office.
Yep. So the way it works is they did provide us with they bill quarterly, and that's what they provided us for the numbers. I think it kind of looked to what Jerry was saying, like we had the Allianz issue that was handled by an outside law firm, and then yeah, Reinhardt and all that stuff. But that was the amounts that's four quarters of billing from the city attorney's office. And I do check it over. I check their math on it, and it I guess it's accurate. I'm not one to question it.
Yeah, they'll be happy to charge us.
$3,000. I don't question it either. No, thank you. I appreciate it. I just thought it was extremely low compared to, especially even with the Allianz. They were part of those discussions, and I'm sure you know, things were going well. But no, I appreciate it. It's a good thing to be fun or to plan. That's all I have.
Thank you, Molly. Tom, did you have any questions? Mr. Klusman?
Molly kind of hit on him. I was going to ask about that $12 million line also. It just seems odd that we kind of keep it in there, but I see why now. David, I guess a question, if it's complex, I could get you offline, but is it the way you're mentioning that some of the more managers now want to invoice you for their cut? Is that preferred by us, or do you, it seems like it would give you more flexibility to generate money from where you decide rather than them peeling it out somewhere in our holding? And is that just so they can keep the AUM up, or?
Yeah, I don't think we have managers telling us that. It's more of an asset allocation and structure decisions. There are no instances where investment managers are saying that they prefer to pay us one way or another. So that may have just come across,
that's fine.
Incorrectly, yeah. A little bit. Really what it is we have certain separate accounts, I think, almost always pay. I think they probably always pay invoice. We have a few mutual funds and CIT products that still bill us, but typically, once we set a fee schedule, when we hire a manager, we always ask them if they'll invoice us directly, but it just so happens that the alternative managers, it's just kind of a given that they don't bill you directly. It comes out of the NAV, and that's just accepted practice. And we've invested more and more in vehicles like that over the last 10, 15 years. So I wouldn't say anything has been changing, and it doesn't impact anything we're not doing anything that we're uncomfortable with, or our managers aren't putting us in a position to change something that we like. So.
Oh, good. Okay. And then Jerry, if I understand this process right, once the board approves this, then this is what you take over in November to the council?
That's correct, yes. Actually, we submitted in May a draft framework for the budget office. And then then we would go in October. Larry will come and will present the whole thing to the
for the F&P. Okay. Yep. Well, it all seems really very modest for the increases across on all the points. The only one is the salaries and the fringe, but those are long overdue for correction. So that's the cumulative of many years of them not being appropriate. So, yeah, I think this is great. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, and you guys covered my question, so I think I'm good too.
I have one little silly question, and I'm going to say it. I'm just, because one of the initiatives I'm looking at with the city standpoint, I'm just curious. And I know there are things we can, certain things we just can't do, right? So, but no harm asking, I think. Look at the, in the general office expense, with the postage and mailing, and in the day of age where we're trying to transition more to electronic and, you know, things like that. This continues to increase. Is there any initiative or incentive to this? Maybe is there any opportunity that is for us to maybe explore areas where instead of doing manual postings, we can do more virtual, real-time, electronic ways? I'm curious. And I don't know what our peers in the universe is doing when it comes to things like that. Or are we mandated by state or something? We have to do hard mailing and things like that. Just curious.
Molly, this is Jerry. Could you please clarify? I'm having a hard time hearing you. It's probably mostly my fault. So I did hear you mention that you're thinking that maybe electronic operations would be better in some areas. What areas specifically were you thinking of?
Oh, I'm not saying it would be better, Jerry. I think, I'm saying is, how we explore when it comes to postage and mailing, is there any opportunity or have we explore, I don't know what our peers are doing when it comes to that and what we can and cannot do, prohibited by whatever reasons, to you know, go more electronic, more, you know, system versus actual mailing postage.
Well, sure. Now I understand the category. So we do send out a newsletter. We try to get people to use to do it online. And then, of course, we have, this ties into the issue you raised earlier about elections, right? A big chunk of our mailing expense is involved with elections periodically. Not every year, but the last couple of years we've had elections. And then, of course, we do have to send documents back and forth to our members, because we required them to send us, you know, copies of their, and actually in some cases originals of their personal documents like marriage license and stuff like that. We've had conversations with the lawyers about that. We can continue to have them. I know that most funds are not quite as fussy as we are because we're trying to protect against fraud. But and I'm sure that's not the most, that's not the biggest part of the postage, but it's printing and that goes into the mailing category when we use the city's, you know, print contract. So, yeah, we can review all those things that we send out in mass quantities, if I can use that phrase, to all of our members, and see if we can tell them we're going to deliver electronically from now on, unless they opt in. And that's the way to do it. Yeah, that's a good point. We can certainly, I mean, that's a big number for postage. You're right.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think also it would be, I know when I receive my things in the mail of like my total service years and all of that, I'm always like, well, what do I do with it? Do I save this or do I just wait till the next one that comes? But if it was electronic, I wouldn't have to. My husband loves paper statements, which is weird, but I don't.
Yeah, I just got mine too, and I had exactly the same question.
I was like, what do I do with this now?
Yeah, I want to save it, but the question is where? No, I had a folder, but it disappeared, so at home. So electronic is better because my electronic files are more orderly, actually.
Okay. Yeah, I would actually like again, too, because there'll be other people who I believe, like, you know, while I think the three of us really consensus where do we save this, I actually scan mine in and save it that way, so I kind of duplicate the effort there. But there are other people who might want a hard copy, but I like the idea of giving our members an opportunity to either choose hard copy or not. I think we find, you know, like people like us would say, you know, we prefer the electronic, where we have our cloud doc, where we can save our documents and access to wherever we are, whenever we want to for years to come. So, but others might like hard copies, so.
Right, I mean, we have emails for some of our people, but we can pursue that more aggressively and tell them we're going to email. And if you want to receive anything from us, you better give us your email.
What would be cool is if it could somehow be in like the HCM system, like if you could look it up in your self-service.
Right, exactly.
As I just said this, right, as we're embarking on a new ERP, but that would be interesting actually.
And have an account with that in our self-service system, and then we'll you know, deposit things in your account, sure.
Where you can access your account from your phone, whether it's an app or whatever it is that you can go into that app and access your ERS, where you are with your pension, your hour, you know, your time served, and any documents you want. And then it can just have that limited to the city of Milwaukee. Active employees, retiree, but MPS and so forth. So that's not a bad idea, Jerry. I like that.
Yeah, Terry Sheehan is here, yes, so, and he's a guy that's one of the technical whizzes that makes this possible, so.
Well, self-service actually already has that feature in there.
Yes.
So they can go in and, look, anybody can create their account and go in and pull up their service credit.
We just haven't pursued it as aggressively as we probably could.
Yeah.
Okay.
Need to wean people off hard copies, really what it comes down to. Yep.
I'll sign up. I'll be your first to sign up. Anyway, thank you. I don't want to take much more of your time. I appreciate that.
Okay. Any more questions for the budget, the 2024 budget? I think we just need a motion to approve so that we can recommend it to the full board. Did Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Bell is here. Did you have any questions? I just want to make sure.
Thank you. And good morning, everybody. No, everything looks great. Just wanted to kind of listen in and get a get a better understanding of the budget. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah, I'm glad you joined us. We never have anyone else that joins us.
Yeah, no problem.
Oh, it's still online. Well, good morning. Tiffany, do you have any questions?
No, I'm just mad that the word's getting around at the A&O committee such a good time, and now we're going to have a little time.
That's funny.
Mr. Healing, did you have any questions for the budget?
No, not at this time.
Okay.
Just joining in to figure out a little more about it.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks for joining us. I guess then at this time, I would take a motion to approve the draft ERS 2024 budget.
Tom, a motion.
Thank you.
And Molly will second that motion.
Thank you. Hearing no objections, the motion passes. And with no other agenda items, I would take a motion to adjourn the meeting.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Molly.
Tom will second.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned at 9:26 a.m. Thank you, everyone, for coming.